Thursday, June 11th, I got Doris, Mary Ellen, and the children off on a sightseeing trip and then settled down for work on the speech for the Golden Slipper Club and on mail, part of it in the Rose Garden, on some comfortable chaise lounges with Andrew Jackson's magnolia trees in full bloom behind me and their sweet scent and the sunshine, making it a wonderful place to work. Lyndon joined us for a late lunch, Mary Ellen, the children, Linda Bird, and I, and we asked Mary to give the blessing, and a very grown-up little Mary did it with great composure and speed. In the middle of the afternoon, I caught a plane for Philadelphia, where the Golden Slipper Square Club was to honor me with an award. Our good friend Albert Greenfield, the financier, had requested me very earnestly to do this, although he himself is not a member of the club. It's a Masonic club composed, about 65% of it, of the wealthiest Jews in Philadelphia. And their main activities are supporting a summer camp where some 600 children come during the course of 2 or 3 months, one group staying 3 weeks and then moving on and then another group coming. Very poor children who couldn't possibly go to camp without this. No regard given to race, creed, or color. They maintain over 100 college scholarships and many small personal charities immediately done, like an operation to correct the hair lip of a girl who was ashamed to go to school as she was, or purchasing a wheelchair for a member of a family too poor to buy one, or when the mother of 12 children comes to court, Judge Hoffman's court, with one of them who's gotten into trouble, and Judge Hoffman finds there's no food in the house. The Golden Slipper Club, without waiting for the long processes of caseworkers and governmental charity, gets some out before supper time. It turned out to be a very interesting and exciting evening. Mayor Tate had met me at the airport, along with Mrs. Mann, representing the city, and then at the Benjamin Franklin Hotel, the first event after I changed, was to welcome the officials of the Golden Slipper Square Club in my presidential suite, where we all had our pictures taken. Beautiful Mrs. Greenfield, hair piled high, and Mr. Greenfield, Judge Sidney Huffman, the present president of the club, and Edward H. Rosen, young, handsome, dynamic, young incoming president, the chief award winner of this year, Morris Jenkins. And then we went in to a small reception given by the Greenfields in the Poor Richard Room, which turned out to be not so small. It was fun to run into Jean Robichaud there, who long ago was co-author of a newspaper column with Liz Carpenter when I first knew her, a native of Austin and now married to a doctor, obviously a well-to-do one, young and nice, here in Philadelphia. There were about 500 guests seated at their tables when we went into the dinner. I sat between Frederick Mann, who is a sort of Angie Biddle Duke of the city of Philadelphia, and Judge Hoffman, president of the club. Everybody had a good time, and everybody enjoyed talking about all the good things the club had done, and nobody more than me enjoyed hearing about them. Judge Hoffman was a great friend and admirer of Arthur Goldberg, and we both agreed that we hadn't thought anybody could possibly be as good a Secretary of Labor, and then gradually, I, who had rather resented Goldberg's being imprisoned in the ivory tower of the court, grew to like Willard Wirtz just as much and think he was just as capable. But I couldn't say all of this before Judge Hoffman himself had said it. He gave me delightful thumbnail sketches of everybody in the audience, or rather outstanding people. For instance, a Judge Adrian Bonelli, who had come over from Italy as a very small boy with absolutely no money and had risen to be one of the top jurists of Pennsylvania, about 5 feet tall, red-faced, white-thatched, who bounced around like a tennis ball and seemed to know every person in the room very well, including me. The room was full of success stories of America, immigrants or the children of immigrants who had come over and made money or done well in professions or government in this country. Judge Hoffman said, "There's many faults about the Jews, but one of them isn't lack of generosity. They're the most generous people in the world. Why, I could just stand up here right now and raise $10,000 for the Hottentots in 15 minutes. I don't doubt that he could, but it wouldn't be entirely the natural generosity of the Jews responsible, because when he got up to speak, it was obvious he was one of those natural-born orators from whom ideas just come bubbling out, clothed in excellent language. Also, his speech had the virtue of being short. He was billed on the program as having a national reputation for his innovations and attempts to understand and solve the problems of juvenile delinquency. And he was just as enthralled in the subject as Lyndon was once in building dams. He has a program going now to get volunteer workers from among the young people, their peers in age and social background, to try to help those, tutor them, those who are potential dropouts or who are in danger of getting into trouble with the courts. He was real doleful about the chances to bring back those that finally reach detention homes or reform schools. He says 1 year out of a reform school and 65% of them are back in the courtroom. Well, it was an education, and I love being close to someone who loves his work. On my other side was bluff, outgoing Frederick Mann, who had apparently made a fortune and then some 15 years ago or so gone into public service and found himself unable to get out of it. So he said, because each succeeding mayor said, "You can't leave me. Now is the worst time of all. You've got to help me over this crisis." And then another crisis followed quick on its heels. He told me he had 5 daughters. He pointed out one in the audience who had, when she graduated from high school, been accepted at 7 colleges, the top 7 in the country. She had chosen Radcliffe. The actual presentation of the award was done by Mrs. Greenfield, gracefully, with great poise. She had been introduced as one of the first ladies of Philadelphia, on the Board of Public Education of Philadelphia and the State Board of Education. Quite a woman doer herself. The award was a sterling silver replica of an inkstand used at the signing of the Declaration of Independence, and the inscription on it was very dear indeed. Too generous just makes me want to get out and do some of the things I've already gotten credit for doing. My response was very brief. Just thank this organization that had translated high-sounding words into meaningful deeds for the children and the needy families of this area. We live in an exciting and compassionate age. We witness governments around the world growing more responsive to human suffering. And we know that it is not the developing nations alone, but our own who have unfinished tasks in the Department of Human Want. But no government, however sensitive or responsible, can do all the tasks alone. It is organizations like yours who tend to human wants in a personalized human way. The city of Philadelphia is a city of brotherly love, and it is due in no small measure to your own golden footsteps. By the time I'd spent 2 hours with them, I could really be enthusiastic about it, and I think they liked it too. Then the band struck up, and I got 3 dances with Mr. Greenfield, Judge Hoffman, and young Mr. Rosen before getting off about 10:30 to drive back to Washington. There's no such thing as a plane that late, so it had to be a 3-hour drive, which actually I didn't mind at all. Simone Poulain, Francis Lewin, and I had some pillows and blankets in the back seat, and they were good company. My thoughts went back to Lyndon's dilemma. In fact, they seldom leave it. How he could get out, or does he have to go on? Yesterday, the Senate had cleared the way for a vote on the Civil Rights Bill by invoking cloture with about 4 votes extra. In about 10 days, maybe it will pass the Senate and then back to the House. Maybe in 2 or 3 weeks, he can sign it into law. That would be a high point on which to get out. But then what? I fear the repercussions so much, not only in Lyndon's personal life, but in the fact that he has sort of become a father image in the country. And there's nobody in the Democratic Party quite ready to step into his shoes without a few months' build-up. And his unwillingness to carry on might bring with it a wave of disillusion, resentment, even bitterness from Democrats and from people everywhere that would be too painful to bear. He wants me to help him get out, and I think I can only say, stay on.